Welcome to the Hired by Passion podcast. I'm your host, Marcel Richard, and I will be interviewing artists and entrepreneurs on how they were able to escape the 9-to-5 and turn their passion into an income. Hello, and thanks for choosing to listen to the Hired by Passion podcast. I have a great interview for you today with Kim Addis. Kim is the president and founder of the Frame of Mind Coaching and Journal Engine Software. Author, speaker, entrepreneur, coach, and mother of five, Kim is recognized as one of North America's foremost experts on performance through thought mastery. By using her unique process of integrating online journaling in her coaching, Kim helps her highly driven clients to examine and shift their thinking in order to yield extraordinary results. In this episode, we explore how Kim's high school experiences shaped her career. We talk about some reasons why we procrastinate and how we often just need to ask to be able to access some of the resources and mentors that we really want to talk to. In the end, we talk about my own insecurities about finding my place and my voice in the whole world of podcasting. So without any further ado, here is Kim Addis. So I'm here with Kim Addis. If you meet someone for the first time, someone who doesn't know you, and they ask you the famous question, what do you do? What's your answer to that question?
Oh, well, that's a great question. So here's what I say is I coach a very select type of person. I coach people who are extremely driven, who have four things in common. Number one is they have huge goals that they want to achieve. Number two is that they're essentially really good people who want to make a difference in the world and leave a positive impact. Number three is that they are, let's call them, really big livers, people who are spirited and want to live an extraordinary life, people who want to travel and have great relationships and make lots of money and really experience all the pleasures of life. And the fourth thing is that they tend to be very frustrated. They tend to feel like they're not where they want to be, and they have conflicts in their lives, and they have tension, and they tend to get into their own ways. So that's the person I coach, and that's what I do. I coach these extraordinary people.
So these people do seem like extraordinary people. How do you go about finding them?
They find me a lot of the times. You know what? I do a lot of podcasts, so they hear me. I speak at different venues. I do a lot of speaking engagements, so they find me. But more than anything, we get a lot of referrals.
Cool. Awesome. So that, and those are the best kind, right? Because you get a warm lead coming in and someone who's interested, right?
Of course. I mean, it's the greatest compliment too, because it says that whoever was the referring person really feels strongly about you to the point where they're ready to put their name on your brand. So it's really, it's the greatest compliment.
Awesome. So if the same person that you met would ask you the question, what are you really passionate about, Kim? What would your answer be?
I'm passionate about helping people live their passion. I'm using your language now.
Yeah.
But that's what I'm passionate about. I'm passionate about seeing people transform their lives and getting rid of all the weight that they tend to carry on their shoulders, wherever it comes from. I'm really interested in seeing people live a lot more freely. Okay. That's my passion.
Yeah. And if you look back throughout your life, can you kind of pinpoint where this passion was born?
Oh gosh, I think it was born years ago, but I'll tell you a very interesting story. When I was young, I was kind of a shy, careful teenager. And when I grew up in Montreal, and as you know, and how it works in Montreal is that you go to grade 6 and that's elementary school, and in grade 7, that's high school. And how it used to work was the people who were in grade 7 and grade 8 used to have lunch together. And we were in a school where there was a big circle. And so you ate lunch and then you essentially walked around the circle. So I was with a friend walking around the circle. And there was this, to me, odd looking girl who was walking near me. And she was tall. She was thin. Her hair was very, very thin. And she was missing a tooth. And she just looked very strange to me, particularly for my 12-year-old eyes. Like, I had never seen anyone like that. And I just kind of gazed at her, and she caught me looking at her. And she got very mad. And she ended up kind of cornering me and saying, "What are you looking at?" And she wanted to beat me up.
Yeah.
You know, so everybody gathered around and, you know, fight, 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 fight. And I was like, again, you know, small, young, and not really the fighting type. I'm like, "Look, I'm really sorry." And I, you know, tried to get out of it. Finally, someone said to her, "You know, leave her alone." And she backed off.
Okay.
So why am I telling you this story? Is because I started to dream about her, like, all the time. probably for the rest of my years in high school, and here's how the dream went. For whatever reason, we were on a roller coaster together, and I would have a conversation with her, and the conversation went like this. You know, you don't have to live like this. You can change your life. I can help you. Right? And so you asked me the question, where did this begin? And honestly, it began right there in that moment.
I really love that story, how your passion was born through a fight or flight kind of, I'm gonna be in a fight here. And
that's right.
You wanting to help that person. So I guess that's where it was born. So how do you think that developed over the course of your life into being what you're really passionate about now today?
Honestly, I used to help people all throughout my life through high school. I was the person people came to talk to, no matter what group they belonged to. You know, in high school, there are different groups.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I was young, there was the stoner group and the preppy group and all the different groups. And I was friends with pretty much everybody. There was no distinction for me. And they would come and talk to me about what was going on in their lives. So I always had this predisposition to being a good listener and to being able to share some kind of wisdom about what was going on. But over time, you know, life goes on. You change direction a little bit, but your roots never change. And so what you find is you always go back to your base. And that was always my base.
Okay. So when you were growing up, when you were in high school, you know, already kind of doing a bit of coaching in a non-official way, did you think you wanted, what was your future plan? Like, what did you think you wanted to do back then?
Honestly, I didn't know. I thought that maybe I would go into politics.
Okay.
But I'm not a very political person, and I'm not a big fan of conflict and tension and all that kind of stuff. As I aged, I am better able to handle it and cope with it. And it doesn't make me feel as bad as it used to. But in the day, it was something I avoided at all costs. And I'm sure that people who are listening can somewhat relate, or at least some of you can relate. Conflict isn't something fun, at all times. And so we tend to want to run away from conflict. So I wasn't sure. I was interested in making an impact in the world. I was interested in the idea of being a leader, but I wasn't interested in the process of politics. So I had no idea where I was going to go. I ended up going to university and going into psychology. So again, you kind of always go back to your roots. You go back to what's calling to you.
Definitely. And I think that's a natural progression of when you were saying that people were coming to talk to you. I figured psychology would have been a good choice. And that's kind of essentially where you went. But when you finish in psychology, I think like a lot of people who finish in psychology, you realize like there's not a whole lot I can do specifically with a bachelor's in psychology, right?
That's exactly right. There's not a whole lot I could do. And so I ended up, and I was very young when I graduated. I was 20 when I graduated, and I ended up going to work for a balloon store. And I worked there for a little while and thought to myself, hey, I could do this. And I ended up opening my own balloon business. And so I always had an entrepreneurial spirit. And, you know, I always tried different things.
So what's interesting is that you mentioned that you were shy and careful. So how did you take that shy and carefulness of it when you were young to the risk taking that's necessary to become an entrepreneur?
You know, I was drawn to certain things. I was drawn to leaders. And I slowly moved my way there. So I started getting involved in Students Council, and I started to go to leadership conferences, and the teachers kind of noticed me. You know, I remember this one time I was, I don't know why I'm talking so much about high school, but oh well, I was in grade 9 and I went on a ski trip, and I was the worst skier in the whole entire class, like the worst. Everybody was in a group, but I had a group of one. It was just me in the group with one instructor, one-on-one. It was so bad. I kept falling. I couldn't get up. It was terrible. Like, honestly, I was embarrassed to be on the slopes. But the vice principal wrote me a letter, and the letter was this: I'm really impressed with you. I'm impressed that you didn't get up, that you didn't give up, that you kept getting up, even though it was tough for you. Well, I took that letter. I put it on my wall in my bedroom for years because it was like someone paid attention. And I think over the years, I always had someone who paid attention. And that, you know, that helped me kind of live into a bigger version of me. And as a coach, that's what I do for my clients.
Definitely. And I think you focused specifically on that kind of stuff, right? The mindset of how to change the way you're thinking in order to achieve the success you want, right?
That's correct. That's exactly what we're focused on here at Frame of Mind Coaching.
So I saw that you mentioned that you had sales in your blood. So you mentioned previously that you wanted to be selling. So do you think that it's kind of, it is somewhat of a jump of being, shy and careful to wanting to sell. So what do you think changed in your mindset to be able to achieve that?
You know, I started off selling dance tickets, and then I moved into selling balloon decorations for people's parties and weddings and things like that. And then slowly I moved into selling. I used to own a software company. Now, of course, I sell coaching. And really, if you think about it, everybody is selling every day of their lives, whether it's which movie to go to or what kind of dinner to have, or, you know, when if anyone's listening and you have kids, you're constantly selling something to your kids. Eat your vegetables, brush your teeth, do your homework, whatever it is, you're always selling something. And so selling is really part of our DNA. We just don't always acknowledge it. And oftentimes we view it as something kind of negative and underhanded. And the truth of the matter is it's a brilliant mechanism for communication.
Okay. So when you were, going from these jobs and selling, did your kind of passion or your vision for what you wanted in your future change over time? And what kind of changes did you see it go through?
It's not that my vision changed. What happened was, for me, I owned a software company and I owned it with two partners. One of them is now my ex-husband. And so for a while we thought we could still work together. And that was a big mistake.
Yeah.
Big mistake. And so one thing led to the other, and I ended up selling my shares. And so it was a tough time, I have to tell you. It was one of the toughest times in my life. And as soon as I sold my shares and I was not working, and I, as a single mother, no work, what am I going to do? I got recruited by a coaching company. And it was a local company, and they knew me from the industry, and they hired me to be their director or their VP of marketing. And when I went there, because they had a charter of values. And I read this charter of values and, to help people live inspired lives or whatever it was. I'm like, that's me, right? That's exactly. And so I felt this resonance, you can say. And when we're talking about passion, how do you know you're passionate about something? Resonance is a good way to figure out if you're passionate about something, right? So if something turns you on, if something excites you, if you feel like you're aligned with that thing, then that's an indication of passion.
Yeah.
And so I went to work for this company, and this company had a very traditional coaching model. And, I'm an entrepreneur. I'm not really designed. It's not in my nature to really work for anyone else. So I lasted all of 9 months.
Okay.
And I'll tell you something. The day that we agreed that it was time for it to end, you have no idea. I left the building, and it was like the weight of the world was lifted off my shoulders. I was so happy to not have to go to that building anymore. But the point of it is that I went and I learned how traditional coaching is done. And I thought to myself, there's got to be a better way. There's something wrong with this system. Okay, so what is traditional coaching? Traditional coaching is mostly the ideology of helping someone achieve a goal. Right? So it's not entirely that, but it's mostly that. And so if I were coaching you in the traditional model, I would say to you, Marcel, what is it that you want to achieve? Let's look at why you want to achieve that thing. What would it do for you in your life if you achieved that thing? And we would create a vision, and then we would create a plan. And then we would take that plan and break it down into smaller components so that you would have action items to help you move towards the achievement of that goal. And I, as your coach, would hold you accountable.
That's right.
Okay, so that's traditional coaching.
It is.
And for me, it rubbed me the wrong way. And I'll tell you why. I thought, people kind of know what to do, but something's stopping them from getting it done. And that thing that's stopping them is fundamentally their thinking. So if I give you a list of things to do, and you're answering to me, first of all, who am I that you should be answering to me? I'm just someone, right? I'm not that important. The question is, why aren't you doing these things on your own? And what we've discovered is that people have thinking patterns. People have beliefs, perspectives, and values that interfere with their ability to take actions that will lead to their goals. And so very often in coaching, what we're doing is helping people take action. But action follows thought. And so we're only actually doing half of the work, half of the job. in the coaching world. And so for me, I felt like that's not the right formula. What I need to do is really understand how a person thinks and look at how their thinking is sometimes moving them forward and sometimes moving them back, holding them back. And if I look at you, it's not like you're never taking action. You're sometimes taking action, but you're sometimes not taking action.
That's right.
So what is it that causes you to take action sometimes on some things? And what is it that causes you to be paralyzed sometimes on some things?
And I think a lot of people starting out do suffer from procrastination for mindset issues. So what do you see being the major roadblocks in people having this procrastination issues?
I see two things. One of them is that people feel like they should be doing something, and that should be is often something that has been imposed upon them from others. And it's not anything that they actually want to do. And so number one is I see procrastination as a function of feeling forced, feeling obligated to do something that fundamentally doesn't sit right with them. The second reason I see procrastination happening is that people have a set of limiting beliefs that prevent them from taking the actions that are aligned with their goals. So they think in ways that contradict the very things they desire. And so we either have to, what we need to do is say, is this something you actually want? Is it your thing? Or does your wife want it for you? Do your parents want it for you? Do you think you're supposed to want this? Like, is this your real desire? So that's number one. Number two is if it is their real desire, then we look at what's preventing you from making this happen. And what we find is often people have conversations consciously or unconsciously that say, well, I can't really do this. So if someone wants to start a business and they haven't taken action, well, I can't really start a business. I don't have the money. I have this responsibility over here. I have a job. I can't really quit it. You know, that would be too risky. I'm afraid. I don't know what I'm doing. I know how to build this widget, but I don't know how to build a business. I don't know the accounting side. And there's all kinds of reasons that get in their way. And we have to identify those, bring them to the surface and address them. It's a thinking problem that precedes anything else.
Okay. But if we take an example of an artist in any kind of form or shape, a lot of them want to create art while there's a business aspect that they realize needs to be done. Like they need to do their marketing, they need to do their PR, they need to do all that, but that's not what they really want to do. But yet they don't really have the fame or notoriety to be able to hire someone to do these things, right? So how can he change his mind? Because he will most likely need to be able to do these business side of things.
Well, look what you just said. He doesn't have the fame, the notoriety, and to hire someone. So in there, without saying it, is he doesn't have the funding. He doesn't have the money. He doesn't have the resources. And so your belief is that all resources are a function, is something you purchase. Okay, so there's your belief, and your belief is I can't access resources without money. And that's not a truth. It's common to access resources with money, but it's not absolutely mandatory. And there are all kinds of resources out there that we can access that don't necessarily have to include a money trade. They can include a trade of services. They can include maybe someone who's on an internship with you. They can include a million things. There are ways to access resources without spending a dime. Like very, very quickly, I'll tell you a story. When I started my last business, I had this idea, and it was to work with people in high schools. And I was living in an apartment, and I was still married to my ex-husband. And I thought, you know what, if I could take on some co-op students, then I can get some funding from the government and create these amazing programs. And he looked at me, he said, who's going to give you students? Where are you going to bring them to our apartment? That's never going to happen, right? And I thought, he has a point. But I didn't have any money to go and rent a place. Like, rent is very expensive.
Yeah.
And you know what I did? I went to a local mall. I saw that they had an empty storefront. And I made a proposal for them to lend me that storefront from 1 o'clock to 4 o'clock every day. And they gave it to me for free.
Really?
Yes, really. And so what I want to really express is that we have a whole bunch of beliefs that cause us to become still or stuck. And those beliefs are all inventions. Now, is it easy to get those kind of resources? No, it's not necessarily easy, but it's not impossible. And they're all there for you. And they become easier to get if you believe that it's possible. If you don't believe it's possible, game over.
Definitely. But I'm curious on the specifics of how did you sell that idea to have them to lend you that storefront for 3 hours a day?
I wrote a proposal. I said, I'm working with young people. I'm teaching them job skills. You have a free space and this would be really great for the community, and on and on and on. And they said, sure. Like, they're not renting it out right now. And the idea was if a renter comes, then fine. My time would be up.
Okay.
But in the meantime, I had, you know, a good year there.
Nice. Yeah, and I like the way you're thinking about it, right? It is, you're doing it as to help other people, and then it is, sometimes you just need to ask. I've learned that when I was younger, but I often forget that important lesson that sometimes the hardest part is just asking, because a lot of people are looking to help other people. They're interested in helping other people, and if it makes sense to help other people and there's nothing really stopping them, then why not, right?
Exactly. And you know what? There's so much available out there. There's so many mentors out there. There's so many services and resources out there. It's just in abundance, but we always feel a deprivation. And that's a function of our thinking as well.
Okay. So you mentioned mentor, and I think there's something that a lot of people struggle with is that when you're starting out, you think you want to do this, or you're kind of getting into something, you want to reach out to mentors, but you're wondering like, why, like, this person is busy. Why would he have time to help me? Right. So how do you think one can get through that mindset and be able to go ask these people that he looks up to, though, would you be interested in meeting with me once in a while just to talk about this or that?
How do you get over that mindset? I think that one of the things that has helped me is, what do I have to lose?
Yeah.
Right. I have nothing to lose. I can ask, they can not answer, or they can say no. And I'm not any further ahead or behind than I was when I started. So I have nothing to lose. This is a zero risk situation. You know, I'm not putting out any money. I'm not risking my health. I'm not putting my children's lives on the line. This is a zero risk situation. Right. And so if you can start to think in those terms, like, how risky is this to ask for help? It's no risk at all.
Okay, good. That's a great mindset to have. So I noticed that you went out and you got your MBA. And I'm wondering, do you think it was worth it to do an MBA for being an entrepreneur?
Absolutely. And I'll tell you why. First of all, I was very young. I was 23 years old when I got in to do my MBA. But what did the MBA do for me? It allowed me to see myself in a different light. And the whole entire game of success, whether you're an entrepreneur or a high-level executive, it doesn't really matter. The whole entire name of the game is looking at your thinking, particularly what you think to be true about yourself. And so if you think of yourself as not too smart or not too capable or inexperienced, you're already at a disadvantage. So getting into the MBA program already boosted up my self-esteem.
Okay.
You know, being in the MBA program with other really smart people really also made me feel, you know, I saw myself in a different light. And that's exactly what we're doing. If you think you're capable of doing something, the likelihood of being successful is dramatically higher.
Okay, cool. That's interesting. So after you finished your MBA, I'm not sure of the whole timeline, but you did decide to have a big family. I mean, 5 kids in today's age is a very big family. So
yeah, no, I didn't decide that. I got married very young.
Okay.
And I had 2 kids, and then I got divorced, and then I got remarried with a man who had sole custody of his kids. He had 3 kids, and now we're all together, one big happy family.
All right. Okay. Yeah. So do you find that, how do you find the balance of wanting to having big desires of doing, you know, a lot of business and having such a big family that has to have a demand for time on your, you know, on yourself, right?
Yeah. It's a good question. And I think, to be honest, probably I would have grown my company a tiny bit faster if I didn't have all those elements happening.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean my quality of life would have been improved or increased. So everybody thinks about being rich in a different way. For me, being rich is not only about money. It is about money, of course, but it's not only about money. It's about the quality of your relationships. It's about the time you spent. It's about those magical moments that you share. It's about the traditions you build. And so for me, I've done all of that. Yeah. You know, can I have more money? Sure, why not? But it's not about that. It's about looking at your life and saying, you know, is everything in place that's important to me? Do I have great relationships with my kids? Do I get to spend quality time with my husband? Do I get to travel? Do I get to live that spirited, energetic life that my clients are looking to lead as well?
Okay.
And the answer big time is yes.
Was there a time where you realized that, oh, everything seems to be lining up?
You know what? I go through periods where I frequently think to myself how fortunate I am. You know, we've gone through a lot. One of our kids had cancer. And so we've gone through a lot, right? And so life happens, but while life is happening, who are you with while life is happening? Who do you trust? Who do you lean on? Who do you have to hug at night or in the morning? You know, like, what's your life really about? And that's what matters.
Definitely. And I resonate with that a lot, of saying how being rich means so many different things to so many different people. So where did your fascination about journaling start? So a lot of your coaching revolves a lot around journaling, the way you're thinking about doing things. So how did that come to mind for you as a way to help people through their issues, I guess?
Yeah. So I always was a journaler, like my whole entire life, but it really escalated or got to a more serious level when I was going through my divorce. And for anyone who's going through divorce or who has experienced a separation, it's a really, really tough experience. It's tough. And for me, I wanted to go through it with as much grace and dignity as I could muster. And so there were days where, like, I could barely breathe. And so writing in my journal supplied me with some measure of oxygen, you could say. And so I would journal, and it would allow me to express myself, my fears, my worries, my insecurities, my anger, my frustration, everything. And the key is about journaling, and anyone who's journaling should hear this strategy and perhaps take it into consideration, that journaling is really great if you're using it to vent and to unload and to release yourself of all the stuff, all the crap that's floating around in your brain. But it's not good to leave it just there. What is really important is that after you unload, you take the opportunity to ask yourself, so what do I want now? Where am I going? It's time to turn myself around and literally start to ask yourself, what would I rather have? What do I want in my life? And always end your journals pointing yourself in the direction of where you're heading. And so then the journal becomes a tool for reminding yourself where you want to go and setting yourself up to head in that direction. Because when we go through adversity in life, we often get turned around and end up heading in the wrong direction. So the journal allows us to constantly pivot back towards where we're heading.
Okay. So when you started out doing coaching, did you have imposter syndrome that kind of crept in? Did you feel that you were very confident in doing your first coaching sessions with people?
Not at all.
Okay. How did you eventually deal with imposter syndrome, and how are you dealing with it?
Hold on. I never had imposter syndrome,
okay,
but I didn't feel confident. So I would say that there's a distinction. I mean, here were some of my strategies. I felt like I'm inexperienced. I don't know what I'm doing. And so what I did was I implemented some, again, strategies to make it easier for me. Number one is I was afraid to coach someone one-on-one.
All right.
And the reason I was afraid was because I thought, that's a long time to like spend a whole hour with someone. What are we going to talk about for a whole hour? That's very long. And that made me very nervous. And I thought, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to coach a group of people instead of one-on-one. And when I'm coaching a group of people, if everybody can talk for 5 or 10 minutes, then the hour will pass. So that was strategy number one. Strategy number two is I called it a pilot. So they knew that this round of coaching was experimental. And when you're calling something a pilot, they know that there are going to be bumps along the way, that you might make some mistakes, that it's not going to be a perfect ride, but that they are involved in an experiment. And the design of the experiment is for them to provide you feedback at the end of the term. So that was number two. Number three is I was a little bit terrified that I would be ill-equipped as a coach. And so what I did is I hired an experienced coach to coach with me in a more traditional way. So they coached in their traditional way, I coached in the non-traditional way. And what I did was I gauged the response of the people who were involved in the coaching. And the feedback was, we don't like that kind of coaching. And so I very quickly got rid of him. But he was the backup plan for me in case I was in over my head.
Okay.
And then the last thing is I asked people to journal. Why did I ask them to journal? Because I thought, I really want every coaching call to be extremely powerful. How do I get that? How do I get there? And if I could get inside their heads, if I could start to really see what they're thinking and understand what they're grappling with in their day-to-day lives, then our coaching calls will be very powerful. And so I implemented journaling from the beginning because I wanted it to be about mindset as opposed to what did you get accomplished this past week.
Okay. And it seems to like there's an explosion of coaches nowadays, but maybe it's just because I'm looking more into that kind of industry. But what do you think was the key in having you differentiate yourself from all of the other coaches?
I think, A, definitely the journaling, the approach, the philosophy, the platform, the focus on mindset, all of that. But at the end of the day, how do you differentiate yourself? You differentiate yourself by who you are, your personality, your style, your approach, the way you talk to people, the way you resonate for people, the way you relate to people. At the end of the day, you know, you can have a process and you can have a system and you can have a method and you can, and all that is super important. And it's definitely a differentiator. And it's to a great extent, our differentiator. But I think at the beginning of the process, the key differentiator was just me.
But that takes a lot of confidence to use that as a key differentiator, right? There's a lot of people who suffer with imposter syndrome who don't have the confidence of saying that I am enough of a differentiator to be able to position myself in the market that seems to be maybe saturated or seems to have a lot of competition in there.
I never even looked at competition. I never looked at market saturation. I didn't do any of the analysis. I didn't do any of that. You know, I wasn't that advanced.
Yeah.
I think if I had done that, I would have been terrified and I would have gone to sell t-shirts instead. I don't know.
And I think that's something I wanted to talk to you about, even for myself, like in the podcast, like there's, you know, you've done a lot of these similar interview podcasts, right? So,
yeah.
And I'm starting to feel like, wow, am I just doing the same thing everybody else is doing? And that creates self-doubt. That creates, do I need to pivot? Do I need to niche down into something more specific? So how can someone deal with all of that?
Well, I'll tell you something. Again, I've been on a lot of podcasts, and the most interesting podcasts are the ones where the podcaster is genuinely interested and genuinely shares themselves with their audience.
Okay.
And so, you know, you mentioned the imposter syndrome a few times, and while I have felt unsure of myself many times, while I have felt self-doubt many times, I have never, ever, ever felt like an imposter.
Okay.
And so, you know, that's an important distinction there, and I will share that with you. Again, the biggest differentiator you have is your genuineness. And so I have no trouble sharing with my clients or your audience or anybody some of the difficulties I've encountered, and I'm sharing it from a very authentic, genuine place. And so, you know, what's the difference between you and every podcaster? The difference is you, period, end of story.
Yeah, but what I'm wondering myself is how can I stand out why would someone think that I am more interested in or connecting more with me than everybody else out there that have, like, you know, a lot of experience or a lot have been in the game for so much longer? Like you compare, like everybody's going to compare, and I know it's wrong to compare, but I'm going to listen to Pat Flynn and he's been doing it for a while. I really like his personality. I connect with him. I enjoy what he's doing. And he is also starting to get into the interview side of, you know, this kind of podcasting, right? Which is kind of a mix with other stuff that he does, but it's still, you know, it feels like there is starting to be a saturation in the market. And to say the imposter syndrome is that I feel like, who am I to think that I'm good enough to play with Pat Flynn? So why would someone listen to me instead of listening to Pat Flynn, right? That's what I'm kind of struggling with. And I wonder and I think a lot of people would wonder that as they're starting in any kind of venture.
Yeah, you know what? It's an interesting thing because, you know, you're proving my point, right? Basically, you're saying, look, actually, you have the ability to do a podcast. We're doing it now. You have the ability to produce a podcast because you've produced a whole bunch of them so far. You have the ability to be interested and to ask a whole bunch of really critical questions. So you have the skill set. What's missing or what's happening for you is that internal dialogue that's causing you to feel a little nervous, a little scared, a whole bunch of self-doubt. And it's that conversation that can erode your success. That's it. Like if you and I were to coach together, I wouldn't teach you how to do podcasts. You know, you've listened to enough of them. Let me ask you a question. What is it about Pat Flynn that you like?
That's a great question to throw it back at me, because what I like about Pat Flynn is his personality.
Okay. What about his personality? What's his personality like?
He just seems genuine, right? He seems like he is just a regular person talking about his struggles and what he's going through. So I think it's exactly that. And I can compare other people. Like, I really like Jason Van Orden that I just interviewed for this podcast. I really resonate with a lot of what he's saying because he has that engineering background, same as I. And yeah. I feel I connect with that. So the people I listen to are the people I feel I connect with in a more personal way, more than in what they're doing per se.
Okay. So then your question should be, who do I want to connect with as an audience? And what exactly, on what level do I want to connect with them? So what do I want to share of myself? And what have I historically been uncomfortable sharing of myself?
Okay.
And now we're getting into probably that unique differentiator, the thing that makes you scared.
Yeah. And it's interesting because a lot of comedians will say that you discover your voice once you get on stage and you talk about those things that you thought you could not talk about to anyone, right?
There you go. You see, not that I know anything about comedy, but I think I'm saying the same thing.
Exactly. So do you remember a time where you felt that you found your voice?
You know what? I remember my first one-on-one client. He started to work with me and I still had the same fears. But every single time we spoke, and I knew, like, I was hitting a lot of really critical points with him. And every time I hit those critical points, he would say, "I hate you," right? In other words, oh my God, this is golden. You're like really making a difference. Like, it was a high impact call, every call. And every time he said, "I hate you," I started to understand very clearly that I had the ability to be a super powerful coach.
Okay. So if you had to leave some kind of parting advice into everybody listening today, what do you think that would be?
My parting advice is this, is that a lot of people want to be somewhere else and they try to get somewhere else, right? They try to go somewhere else. They try to take action and they try to mobilize themselves and they try to, you know, there's an old expression. The old expression is, if you always do what you always did, you'll always get what you always got. You know that one, right?
Yeah.
Well, but it's flawed. And here's the flaw. The truth is, if you always think what you always thought, you'll always get what you always got. And so when you want to move somewhere else and you're having trouble getting there, my recommendation is don't try to take different action. First, ask yourself, how is my thinking getting in the way? So that's my first recommendation. So look at your thinking before looking at your actions.
All right.
That's number one. Number two is, it's really important to take a snapshot or to take to get a sense of where you are today. What's going on in my life? And take a little bit of a measurement. Understand exactly what's working and what's not working and how your thinking is operating. And so one of the things that I do with my clients before they start is I encourage them to take an assessment. We have an assessment for anyone who's listening on our website. It's an assessment of your mindset. And it just gives you the opportunity to take a snapshot of where you are. And that's hugely important to help you determine the things that you need to change and really where you want to go. And every one of those assessments gets reviewed by a coach. And so I encourage you to try that process.
Okay, awesome. And I'll link it in the show notes for people to be able to join that. So if people do want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to contact with you?
Yeah, frameofmindcoaching.com. And my email address is kim@frameofmindcoaching.com.
Awesome.
And if anyone is a journaler and you want to share your journal with me, please do send me a copy or, you know, one journal entry that you've written. I'd be happy, happy to review it with you.
Awesome. Cool. Well, I might take you up on that, Kim.
Oh, please do.
Great. Thank you. And I appreciate you taking the time to come and chat with us. I think you brought a lot of value, and I'm hoping that you enjoyed the call as well.
It was awesome. Thank you so much. And you know what? For a newbie, you're awesome.
Thank you, Kim. I appreciate it. Have a good day. Thanks for sticking around till the end of the episode with Kim Addis. I hope you enjoyed the interview. I thought it was interesting at the start how we talked about high school and her time at high school and how it shaped the person she is today. And I think we can all do that a bit to look back at our past and see what we enjoyed and why we enjoyed all of these things to be able to maybe find what we're passionate about today. I think a lot of us are still searching for what's our passion, and we don't really know what we're passionate about because there's so many different things that we do. But if we look back and take an inventory of everything we did and look at what are the common traits in everything that we've done and why we enjoyed them, I think that's a great step in order to be able to find our passion. Another important thing I think that Kim mentioned is how she talked about procrastination and how there were two reasons why people procrastinated. The first was the word should and how when we feel that we should do some things, and it's not really something we want to do, but it's something that people tell us that we should do, so we feel that we should. And I find that word is so strong, and I think Jason Van Orden in episode 10 is the one who really made that click with me on how the word should is a toxic word, and I really want to read more about that, because I personally feel a lot of time that I should be doing this or I should be doing that, but it's not really what I want to do, so I think we need to take those shoulds out and really concentrate on what we think that we want to do and how to achieve those goals. The second part of procrastination, we're limiting beliefs and how we don't think that we can do that. We don't have the opportunities to do that like others. And it's often these limiting beliefs is that I personally think that it's because we're comparing with other people and we think that we're not to that level or we can't do that because we're comparing. So I think a lot of these limiting beliefs come with comparing to other people when everybody knows you can't compare with others. It's just a recipe for bad things to come out of when you're comparing with other people. So I think we need to look at these limiting beliefs and find ways to get over them and maybe just identify what that limiting belief is and how to work on that. And there's so many resources on getting over limiting beliefs, but I still have a ton, and it is always a work in progress in trying to get over these limiting beliefs, especially like how Kim mentioned that, you know, I assumed that I needed resources to do this and that. And she said that you can find these resources. These resources are available. Sometimes you just need to ask, like how she was able to get a room in a shopping mall to be able to get free resources with co-op students. So that's kind of interesting that, you know, plants the bug in your mind that maybe you just need to ask for some of the resources that you need and you'll be able to get them. And there's so much strength in asking, yet we're afraid of losing face or looking stupid when we do these, when we ask for these resources. But at the same time, if you don't ask, the answer is always going to be no. So I think we need to be able to ask something, and maybe we should create ourselves some kind of challenge that this week we're going to ask one person to do this or that, or ask for the resources or ask for the mentors that we're looking to connect with. So I think we really need, that's an important thing to remember about this interview, is the importance of asking. We need to go out of our comfort zones and ask for the resources that we need. And at the end of the interview, we talked a bit about my own personal struggles and finding my voice and finding how I fit in into this whole world. And I think the reflections that Kim threw back at me were really interesting. And I'm still thinking about that, of how I can use my voice to differentiate myself in the market. So I still struggle with a lot of limiting beliefs. And is my voice unique enough, or is it interesting enough that people will want to follow? But I think that's something I need to work on. And hopefully through this podcast, I'll be able to work on that and improve my confidence on it. So I hope you took some value from this show. If you did, I would greatly appreciate it if you could share it with your friends or colleagues or anyone you think could benefit from it. As well as, I really want people to join the Facebook group. The thing I want most about this podcast is to create a community of people who are looking to get hired from their passion, you know, be able to create a career for themselves and something that they're passionate about, and then talk about it on a Facebook group where we can all help each other in order to achieve this goal. So you can find the link at hiredbypassion.com/Facebook and connect with me. Let me know how I can help you live from your passion. Finally, I just want to send a shout out to Marvin Polis and Valerie Arsenio, who left me a 5-star rating and review on iTunes. I really appreciate that. Thank you. Thanks for listening to the Hired by Passion podcast. If you enjoyed the show, I would greatly appreciate a 5-star rating and review on iTunes.